The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. 12 minutes after 8. It's been here about 3 years. I've never really had the opportunity to sit down and talk with them for a few minutes, so I'm looking forward to this. The president of Rogue Community College, Dr. Randy Weber, is in here, and you came from Kansas. Isn't that right, Randy?
That is correct, yeah. I grew up in Kansas and spent most of my working career prior to arriving in Oregon in the state.
And what drove the move out here 3 years back?
You know, when I was looking for that opportunity to pursue a presidency, there were certain states with different governance systems, and Oregon's local control was attractive to me. The size of the institution was right, and I'd be lying if I didn't say that the coast and the mountains were attractive to both my wife and I.
Yep, that's a big attractant. That's one of the reasons why I love it here, too. And so, well, it's good to have you here, and good to see what's going on at Rogue Community College. You have some enrollment numbers that have been released over the last few weeks that... Now, there are a lot of educational institutions that would love to be talking about the story of enrollment gains that RCC has been going. Can you kind of set the table on how that's looking right now?
Yeah, you bet. When I got to the college about, this is my third year we're heading into, the board and our college employees and I all got together and said, you know, we need to stabilize enrollment. That needs to be our top college priority. And with that goal in mind, we said, what would that look like and what would we do? And I'm so proud to say that, you know, our team's really hit it out of the park. And we've done that through efforts. And the key word I use is partnerships. We said we wanted to focus on this. I've watched our departments focus with one another to say we can develop different strategies to help students succeed. But our community partners are really what has made the difference. We've re-entered K-12 in ways that I think we only imagined prior. Our industry partners have demonstrated a clear need for a more skilled workforce, and so they've stepped up to the plate, and I think we're just seeing the results from that.
Is this an example when you talk about the industry partners? Like, I remember I talked with Randall at Advanced Air, and they'd be talking about programs that might be at RCC. Is this what you're talking about with the local businesses working?
You bet. So we have apprenticeship programs we work with labor on. We've taken our manufacturing and welding and departments and flipped the model a little bit where we've created an open lab so the program is more accessible to working employees throughout the day. And employers we're finding are sending their employees on payroll to get extra skilled learning. And historically, maybe we said, well, if you're going to take this class, you have to take it at this time. And that wasn't very flexible with their schedule. And so just reimagining the way we deliver what we do so people can get the workforce training they need has been a priority. And I think the results are there proving that it's been successful.
So you think people are looking for a more practical pathway forward these days? And it used to be, I'd put it this way, but remember, even when I was graduating in the late 1970s out of high school, the first couple of years of college was looked at as, you know, year 13 and 14 of high school, you know, that kind of thing. Is that kind of starting to go away with the rise in the cost of higher education? I'm just wondering how that helps you or affects RCC's enrollment.
Yeah, there's definitely a value proposition, right, when people are thinking about, am I going to enroll in college or university? And so with us, I think our, you know, prospective students are looking at what's it going to cost and what's it going to lead to? And so am I going to get a good paying job on the other side of this? And one of the costs that we don't emphasize enough sometimes is the cost of time. So when we've got working adults who are trying to balance school with life, how are we offering it in a way that gets them to and through a program faster? So a lot of emphasis has been placed there. If somebody's missing out on a year's worth of earning potential, that's tremendously impactful in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, ultimately the time cost of money.
Yeah.
Or not having the money, too. And also, if you end up, going to work, how much debt are you having to service to pay that off, too? It's all a cost has to be figured out these days or figured in. So how many students do you have enrolled overall, and how does that compare with like 3, 4, 5 years ago?
Yeah, so, community college enrollment is kind of countercyclical with the economy. So right when there's a good economy and jobs are to be had, then people are less looking for skills, workforce skills. When they're struggling to find jobs, they go back for training. So as the economy was rebounding in the kind of 2010s, our enrollments across the country in community colleges were declining. Ours kind of flattened out right before the pandemic. And then between the pandemic and the wildfires, it really took kind of a bath. So the last 3 years, we've been really strong rebounding. This fall, we anticipate we'll serve credit, non-credit, around 5,000 students. And my hopes this year might be a little aspirational, but I think we'll get close to it, are that we get back to 10,000 unduplicated students, credit, non-credit, served through the Valley. And I think in strong days in the early teens, we were up around 12, 13,000. So definitely getting back there is feasible, but it's going to look a lot different than it ever did. Our CTE programs, our career tech ed programs, where we're, a lot of students go directly into workforce at RCC, those are in record enrollments today. Where our students in nursing, our students in industrial technology, our students in truck driving, those numbers are more than we've produced ever.
Okay. What is your most popular program? Just curious.
Yeah, so I think the most popular is tricky in that, like in the community, the one most referenced is nursing. Because there's such a shortage of nurses in the Valley,
And you can take that skill anywhere too. Yeah. That's one beautiful thing about being medically certified.
Very transferable. Pays a great starting wage. But when you look at like our overall enrollments, actually our highest overall enrollments are like in our humanities classes and our science classes.
Really?
Because students who are on both a traditional baccalaureate transfer path, as well as all these career programs, need those gen eds to graduate. So if I'm a nursing student, a prerequisite for nursing series is going to require quite a few science classes.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And so your enrollment looking very good at RCC, Doctor, but you know, SOU and the state university system has been having some problems. Would that be clear or fair to say?
Yeah, I think their enrollment is rebounded a little bit slower. I think what you see in Oregon and in other states is the flagship, the larger universities are doing what they need to do to build their freshman class. And in doing so, sometimes it's taken what has historically been a freshman class from the regional universities. So I know our friends at SOU are working hard to strengthen both their freshman class coming in, but also their transfer relationship with us to get more students in the Valley to head to SOU.
Doctor, higher education has come under fire a lot recently because there's been so much politicization of education that didn't seem to really have much to do with are you getting educated and more or less are you ticking the right and more popular political boxes, you know, so to speak. Does RCC have any of that challenge too, or is it less so than, let's say, a U of O or Oregon State University or Portland State University kind of situation in which it's a routine of protests and counter protests and a lot of tumult?
We have less of that. You will see more of that in more of a traditional urban area or maybe a residential campus where students are living on campus. But as most of our students are commuter students who are trying to balance their school with life, it's not that we don't have students who aren't engaged or active, but it's a smaller number. And what our students expect from us from a kind of comprehensive lifestyle is less than at, as you referenced, University of Oregon or Portland State, where it's more of an active community.
Yeah, I remember when my daughter Sarah was going to Portland State University, there were some wild times there that she would tell me about, and I would think, what does this actually have to do with learning your field? Is what I was thinking. And I'm just kind of wondering, is this something that higher education you think is starting to confront, or just think, hey, you know, are we going to get back to core competencies?
Yeah, I think there's always the questions around what occurs in a higher education post-secondary learning environment. But a lot of what we see is, right, those are often 18, 19-year-olds heading out of the house for the first time ever and trying to find themselves and discover. And you know, golly, there were college students who protested Vietnam many years ago. So I think it's a rite of passage, as many of them maybe see. But I think to that point, we said earlier a little bit where the value proposition is a critical one. So we look at what's the cost to students, you know, what's the general cost of tuition and fees, what's the cost and time to get through a program, how can we mitigate that through dual credit in high school, through strong transfer agreements. And, you know, we have to look and say not every student is looking to spend four and five of their years of their life just out there discovering and learning at such a high rate. And it's so it separates in some ways the haves and the have-nots. There are definitely students from families who have the resources to do things like that, but students who aren't from similar families really are looking for that way to get through that path to a career and that job they've been aspiring for.
That makes sense. Dr. Randy Weber is the president of Rogue Community College. You're going for a bond in Jackson and Josephine County. Could you explain what that's all about and what the money's for?
Yeah, you bet. So as we shared, the career technical programs at the college are seeing record enrollments. And in order to respond to what we've seen as demand from our industries, demand from our students, we've looked at what we're offering and how we're offering it and have determined that in order to continue to grow the programs, we're going to need more capital infrastructure to do so.
Yeah, what kind of capital infrastructure are you looking for with this? It's what, 9 cents per thousand, you were telling me?
Yeah, so it's what we've looked at is putting together a little over $80 million worth of total projects. From that, $60 million would come from local bond measures in our district, which includes Jackson and Josephine County, along with $15 million of state money that requires match. So that bond money could serve as the match money for that, and then additional external sources from fundraising, additional grants we could go to. So that $60 million would be charged at a rate of 9 cents per thousand to the district. Jackson County taxpayers would see that as an extension of a 9 cent bond that's set to expire. So they would continue to pay the same rate as anticipated
rate. Paying. Okay.
Yeah. And then Josephine County, that would be seen as a new 9 cents for residents there.
Okay, but this is being voted on in both counties.
Yes, it's on the ballots in both counties. I always say, you know, we're a college that serves one district in two counties.
So the
total votes for the district will be tallied.
Now, is it buildings? Is it equipment? Or is it both? I mean, what does it actually look like then? Especially when you're asking Josephine County to up their tax rate.
Sure. So it is both, and it's both in both counties.
And how long is the bond?
Yeah. So 20-year bond is what it's looking to be financed at. And what it includes is, so for example, we have a state project approved already for transportation technology. Today we have automotive and Grants Pass that is full with enrollment and a lot of demand from students we can't fill. We have diesel in White City in our Jackson County campus. And so with transportation technology, we're going to build more modern building that actually allows us to offer auto and diesel on both campuses. We know transportation is a barrier for a lot of our students. So students coming from Cave Junction to White City, that's a big hurdle, or Shady Cove to Grants Pass.
That's a hoof.
It really challenging to get through our district. And so when and as we can, we want to be able to offer, at least we have a lot of our credentials, what we call stackable, as much of the program as a student can get locally there. Mm-hmm. And then if they have to go to another campus to complete the program, at least part of that transportation barrier has been removed. So transportation's there, industrial technology, welding, science labs I mentioned. Our science labs are full. So we would add science labs at the Table Rock campus. And so a number of projects similar to that. We do have a website for information side of it. It is rogueccbond.com that provides information on detailed information on the projects.
And I will post that too. But that actually makes sense when you're talking about, you're right, people are coming. Jackson and Josephine County, very large counties geographically, even though the population is not nearly as dense as, let's say, up in Multnomah County, for sure. And so these are the challenges. So you're almost kind of like duplicating and making sure that the Grants Pass and the Medford campus or White City campus are matching as much as possible, so there's less travel. between the counties then?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, that travel, whether students have reliable transportation or time to spend traveling. And these are the programs that, you know, and there it would be nice that we could teach programs in the same physical space like we can our traditional classes. If you can teach a math class and a history class and a writing class in the same classroom back-to-back-to-back hours. But you can't teach a welding lab and a nursing skills lab in the same space very well. So they need dedicated space. They need a lot of square footage. They need expensive equipment to make sure our employers say, you know, they're walking in with those current workforce skills. And I will say our local industries have really stepped up, as that's where a lot of our support for equipment comes from. Our trucking industry, as we've worked to produce more drivers with CDLs, they've stepped up time after time to say, we need more in the industry. How can we help? Nursing partners, Asante and Providence, helped us add a nursing cohort. So we take a lot of pride in what we're willing to offer, but we wouldn't be able to do it if our community partners didn't say, you know, what you're doing is worth the investment to grow our workforce.
All right, very good. Doctor, I appreciate the take on that. I'm going to post that website to you and mention about the information. What's that address one more time on that?
I believe it is RogueCCBond.com.
RogueCCBond.com. We'll put that up on KMED.com too. And it's great getting a chance to meet you. Congratulations on the good enrollment figures. It looks like you're, you know, starting to, you know, bust back. You're not quite back to where it was prior to COVID, but you're almost there, like just a skosh beneath that, right?
That's so, right. Our overall enrollment is almost back to pre-pandemic numbers, not quite there. However, the enrollment in our CTE programs are at record highs. So we're seeing, you know, students are voting with their feet, and those are the programs that today they're migrating toward.
Dr. Randy Weber, the president of Rogue Community College, we appreciate you taking some time, all right?
Thanks for having me today.
Thank you. It's 8:27. You're on KMED and 99.3 KBXG.
Saudis dropped the petrol. Times are changing fast. Russia, China, BRICS, they're shaking off the past. Down in Ashland Town, there's a place to find your trust.
Comfortable with me on that account.
Handle on the Law.
Enjoy Handle Saturday afternoons 1 till 4 on News Talk 106.3 KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
News Talk 106.3 KMED, you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
We'll catch up with the news with Bill London in the center, and then your calls. It is open phones for the rest of this hour. Yeah, until we have Markley Van Camp and Robbins coming on here at 9:06, all right? And a question I wanted to touch in with you, and it was something that OPB was reporting on, and it had to do with the federal government, the BLM, wanting to auction off a bunch of dead trees in Southern Oregon. This is out in the Applegate, all right? And this is 500 acres of forest land. Thursday, it's the Sterling Mine Ditch Trail. That's one of the places. It's the Boaz and Forest Creek timber sales in the Applegate Valley. And they want to cut down a bunch of Douglas fir trees out there that have been, well, you know, it's the drought, it's the beetles, it's everything else. And there's a lot of it that's dead out there. But the BLM is coming into some criticism from Luke Rüdiger. Luke Rüdiger is the executive director of the Applegate Siskiyou Alliance. And he said that a number of these areas that they want to log don't meet the BLM's criteria for dead or dying trees. Now, BLM is saying that, well, these trees are dead and or dying. There's a lot of weakness out there. And I don't know, folks. I was looking at what was going on out in that area, and a lot of it is red and pretty nasty looking. That stuff needs to be logged, doesn't it? Even if there are some live trees in it, at this point you got to do some replanting of it. And I would just remind you that you know, Rüdiger says he doesn't want these trees logged because some of them are still alive. But this is the same guy that loves the smell of fire smoke in the summertime. Remember, he stood up in one of those public meetings and said that. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but he said, "I love the smell of wildfire smoke in the summertime." Because it's the smell of the forest being restored. And so I don't know, is Rüdiger one of these guys that would feel he'd be fine with these 500 acres of trees just catching on fire and burning to the ground and then they'd be restored? But somehow it's a bad idea to cut them down? I mean, if you live out that area, I'd love to get your take on this 500-acre forest land, okay? 500 acres of forest land in the Applegate Valley, Boaz and Forest Creek, Maybe Luke, maybe you think Luke's right. I'd love to get your take. 770-5633. That and more coming up. With so many working and doing business from home, it's good to know there's a community business center to help.
This is SRN News.
It's 8:37. We head to the phones here now. Open phones for the final 20 minutes on this Wheels Up Wednesday. And first we have Joe. Joe, you wanted the bite. You're out working a logging job at this point. What do you think about the BLM wanting to sell those 500 acres of trees, dead or dying, out of the Applegate? Well, any thoughts on that?
The reason they have to have some green trees in there is the dead stuff has no value. The chip market is flat right now.
It is, huh?
So there's not really any need for chips. So you have basically zero value. So you got to have some green trees in there so that they can make some money to actually log it, enough to even pay for the logging.
So essentially you sacrifice a few of the green trees, even if Luke Ridiger doesn't like it. Is that kind of what I'm hearing?
Yeah, it comes down to basic economics. To do the job, someone's got to pay. You got to be able to make money to do the job.
All right.
And that's just what it is. It comes down to basic economics because there's not a market for dead trees. That's what we're doing over here right now is cutting firekill and stacking it because it's 3 years dead. There's no value. All we can do is stack it to try and clean the woods to make it safe to where tree planters can actually go out and plant because right now a slight wind comes up. The trees blow if they're hazards.
Yeah, very dangerous. Joe, how long can fire damaged timber remain or retain any value? I'm not familiar with what the actual number is.
It's about 2 years on anything under about 20-inch diameter.
Okay.
If you get to a 30-some-inch diameter, what they would call old growth, they might make it 3 years and still retain some value because they aren't dried out and cracked yet.
Yeah, but ideally you should be harvesting the fire kill within a year, right? Ideally.
Yeah, everything over here, this is the Cougar Peak fire, everything that has private land has all been logged and is ready for planting in 2 years. Mm-hmm. Then this is the Forest Service ground that they never got around doing anything. Now they're actually, to even try to replant, they have to pay someone just to come in to get them out where they can burn them.
Yeah, got it. All right, Joe, appreciate the opinion on that, and I'll take your expert opinion there, okay? Let me go to David. David's in Phoenix. Hey, David, you want to talk about RCC and more? Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Well, just what you and Dennis were talking about, this president of RCC completely makes that point. My 9%, my 9 cents per thousand is due to retire. I would like to see my property tax go down. But when he said, well, it's $80 million from us and $15 million grant from the state.
Right.
That's exactly what you gentlemen were talking about with prior to. So I just wanted to add that and show that it's even cycling in here. And I've had some friends try to do the heating and air conditioning with Bully, you know, Bureau of Labor and Industry is in on this. The state's in on this. The bureaucracy to do these apprenticeship programs, it sounds good when they advertise, but when people actually try to participate, it's unbelievable what you jump through. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Okay, well, I'll have to ask Randall about that because he's been pretty happy with what they've been doing over at Advanced Air. Because one guy I talk to routinely once a month, you know, on the business segment.
We listen to him. In fact, we're in contact with him now. We're going to see if he knows can be more of a guide through the forest, I guess, as they say. But what I really wanted to call about is we went through all the crazy stuff starting in the 90s about our libraries, went through all that stuff, and we got brand new libraries to which the bond will be paid off. I don't know when, you can ask one of the commissioners, when the county's bond to build the libraries are paid. And then even the buildings and all that will be turned over to the library district, and Jackson County will be free of the libraries. Good for Jackson County. These libraries are all redone. Remember the flagpole in the library in the Taj Mahal with Garth and Rosemary and all the stuff we went through. We have all these new 15 or remodeled branch libraries. I don't know how many people know that the library district wants to build new libraries, close out some of these and build completely new ones like in Central Point They got a beautiful new library. They share the city hall. It was a anyways, 15 to 18 years, and they think these things are old and they all need to be redone. It's insanity. Does everybody know what's going on with the libraries? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, you had just mentioned some of that yesterday, and it was kind of news to me at that point. All right, David, I appreciate the call, but thanks for bringing it up. This is the challenge, though, of permanent taxing districts, isn't it? Right?
It's insane.
A permanent taxing district means a permanent, in other words, you have your woke bureaucracy that has a permanent call on your money unless you get rid of the taxing district. Appreciate the call. 770-5633. If you're on hold, I will get right to you. This is the Bill Myers Show. This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, head to FontanaRoofingServices.com.
American Rancher Garage, united in service.
American Rancher Garage services most vehicles and offers state-of-the-art amenities, affordable pricing, and prompt service you can trust. If you're looking for a reliable, full-service automotive repair shop that provides old-fashioned service to keep you and your busy life moving, you've found it right here, just across the street from Elmer's on Biddle. Call, stop by, or text us through our website at AmericanRancher.com. 541-499-6673. American Rancher Garage, we are united through service.
This is something that's going to be happening next Tuesday. Lynn Barton is the Medicare advisor at Sky Park Insurance. Of course, Sky Park Insurance, I'm a big fan of them. I work with them all the time. Steve is saving me a lot of money on regular. I don't have Medicare yet, but if you have Medicare Advantage or a prescription drug plan, the Inflation Reduction Act is making some big changes. And like Lynn and I have talked about, some of them are pretty good. Some are really bad, could cost you some money. And Lynn is putting on a free Medicare update seminar next Tuesday. It's next Tuesday at the Phoenix Library, 6:30 in the evening. And all you have to do to get in on this and get the updated information and find out what works best for you, because once again, if you have Medicare Advantage or a prescription drug plan, the IRA, Inflation Reduction Act, could be messing with it for good or for evil. You know, you just don't know. But RSVP and let Lynn know that you want to come, okay? 541-499-0958. 541-499-0958. 499-0958. Or you can email Lynn, LYNN, at skyparkins.com.
This is Brent with Homan Built Deck and Fence, experts in custom deck and fence construction. As an authorized Trex Pro deck builder, we use the highest quality products for your deck, including custom handrail packages, drainage systems, and even deck lighting. As a small hometown business, we provide personalized design and creative solutions for your outdoor space. My website is homanbuilt.com, HOMANBuilt.com. Homan Built Deck and Fence. We build the best and fix the rest.
CCB 232-179.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Now Bill wants to hear from you. 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
Quarter before nine, we go to line three since they were the last in line. Well, last in the queue, first in line here. How you doing this morning? Hi, who's this?
Hey, Bill, it's Paul Salmon again. Hey, I work for Chroman over in the Boise area, and we got some timber sales over there that were buckkill. And the Forest Service basically, there were five units in this timber sale, and the Forest Service told us that we were to go in and our timber fallers would make the decision as to what timber was dead and what.
Yeah, you know, something. I'm having real problems on your cell this morning, Steve. We're going to have to maybe do this another time. I don't know if I have a problem with line three and four. I'm going to find out if line four is good or not. I might have to do some work on this off air. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
This is Jim in Medford. How you doing, Bill?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sorry, folks. I've got problems on line three and four. Technical problem. We're just going to busy those out for right now. I'm sorry. We can't use that. Let me go to line one. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
This is David Schott.
Hey, David. How are you doing this morning? What's on your mind?
I'm well. The value of timber killed, dead timber, is not exactly what has been reported. Unfortunately, we only have two mills processing logs in the Rogue Valley, being Jackson County, and they're plywood mills.
Mm-hmm.
If timber is dead for more than 4 or 5 months, plywood mills don't want that timber because when they put it on the lathe, due to checking and bugs and overdry, it will explode. So when the open chain fire sales came up 10 months after the date of the fire, none of the local mills, Boise nor Murphy, would bid on it because it's too big a gamble. And so, unfortunately, it was put up for three different times. And finally, a logger bought it and ended up setting it up into the Umpqua Valley and some over to Brookings, where they do have sawmills, because we don't have a sawmill left in Jackson County or Josephine County anymore.
And now, if I understand correctly, David, and like I said, you know timber industry really well here. For plywood, are you taking it and peeling it like a veneer? Is that how you make
correct.
That?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, you put it on a lathe and you peel it.
All right. And if you have it sitting out in the sun for 10, 8, 9, 10 months, it gets super dry and it's brittle, right?
It's checked, it's brittle, and it will explode on the lathe.
Okay.
And now plywood mills don't want timber that's bigger than 30, maybe 34 inches at the outside, but 30 inches and below is not really, I mean, is what they really want.
All right. Now, is this why when you go past the mills, you see them always watering the logs? I always wonder why they did that.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, exactly. They've got to keep them moist.
Gosh, you know, you learn something every day. I really appreciate that because I never worked in the mill. It's just one of those things that was always a little bit of a mystery to me. I just wanted to be clear here, though, that if we're serious about feeding mills and not wasting wood after fire kill, down here in Southern Oregon, we have to be even quicker. We must be even faster about getting fire kill out of there than a place that actually has still some sawmills left, if I understand you correctly, right?
Exactly.
Is there political support for that, though, up the food chain?
Our senators are not politically inclined because they get so much money from the environmental industry.
Okay, what is so environmentally, superior about just letting the wood rot there?
You got me.
Okay. All right, David. Hey, I'm just asking. All right. Let me go to line two. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Morning, Bill. This is Lunatic Fringe.
Hello, Lunatic. What's going on?
Earlier conversation about AI made me think of an old movie from the 1970s, actually 1970.
Oh, the AI. That was Ron from Grants Pass calling about, so what was that, about having kind of like AI, not judging, but kind of demonstrating who was in the right or wrong on something, I guess, right?
Yeah, being kind of a referee.
Referee, so, that's it.
So this movie was about the United States. They created a supercomputer, and it was called Colossus. And the idea was for the computer to be able to determine if there was a probability of a nuclear war and to avert it.
I remember that movie. What was that called again?
Colossus, the Forbin Project.
The Forbin Project. I remember that when I was a kid. I watched that. I think it was like the late night movie. It's, this is the voice of Colossus. Right? That kind of thing?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, that's right.
I vaguely recall the plot line. So what is it? Why does it remind you of this AI argument?
Thinking that AI is going to be a neutral referee, as referenced, is unlikely to me. At the same time as Colossus, the Russians built another supercomputer, and the two computers got together, and to vastly abbreviate the plot of this thing, they decided that since humans were so unreliable and emotional, that they would rule the world.
Oh.
That way humans would have a better chance of survival. And let me see if I can find this. So the computer said, so that you will learn by experience, I do not tolerate interference. What that means is the humans had tried to separate the two computers.
Mm-hmm.
So they started setting off nuclear bombs or nuclear weapons in the silos in which they were. So the simple fact is at the end of it, these two computers said, you can live peacefully under our supervision, or you can live peacefully as unburied dead.
Oh, I forgot that ending. Thanks for reminding me. My situation is I am a little bit concerned that there is a push that somehow thinks that AI is any more reliable or wise than the humanness which is being input into it right now. That's kind of where I'm coming from. And maybe I'm wrong. I could be absolutely wrong. Maybe, you know, what do you think?
I think AI is having an effect on us now that most people do not anticipate. A lot of the big guys in the tech world, Bill Gates among them, are advocating for nuclear power plants to operate AI systems only. So they would have nuclear power for the next 50 years or so. And with the power from those nuclear power plants going only to the computers that are operating with AI systems.
Yeah, by the way, Lunatic Fringe, those same, you do understand that now. I was reading a research paper talking about how it would be a good thing to have people who believe in conspiracy theories or have the wrong way of thinking. If you have a little conversation with the properly programmed AI chatbot, you'll be a little less radical, a little less uppity, a little more pliable, I think. That's what could go wrong there?
Yeah, being pliable is only good for contortionists.
Okay, good point. Good line. Thanks for reminding me about the Corbin Project. Boy, it's been years, years since I thought of that. This is the voice of Colossus. Yes, yeah, just this side of the Borg. You shall be assimilated.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm Deborah.
And this is our TimberTech story. We built the TimberTech deck. The deck floats.
I'm Randy with Diner 62, and I'm on KMED.
It is 8:56. Bonnie writes me this morning, says about AI, artificial intelligence. Bill, AI is only as beneficial as the people who control it allow it to be, which is to say, prone to corruption and misuse. It may not be able to be controlled once it goes rogue. You can't engineer humanity. Have a nice day. You know something, Bonnie? I'm going to give you an email of the day. Email of the day, sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson and Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com, Freeman Way, next to the Mazatlan Mexican restaurant. By the way, they have a nice little kiosk in there. You can get dental supplies, specialty dental supplies at their cost. No markup. They want you to have healthy teeth. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. All right, I busied out the bad two lines on three and four. Let me go to line one. Hi, who's this? Good morning.
Good morning. Todd from Central Point. A quick outdoor report. Farewell Bend Campground, which was a beautiful campground, backed up against the rogue. A third of the campsites were off reservation, so it was first come, first serve. I was checking out the devastation there,
yeah.
And as I was looking it over, a Forest Service employee came up to the locked gate. And I said, what's the story here? And they said, well, we're cleaning it up, but also the sewer and water system are completely ancient and have to be replaced.
Oh.
So, you know, don't hold your breath. I mean, that was a beautiful spot. But having worked for California State Parks, we had over $1 billion in what's called deferred maintenance. I just call it rot.
And which park are you talking about again, or campground?
That's the one north of upstream from Becky's.
Oh, that's the one that the listener was talking about. It said it was looking pretty bad. Okay.
Yeah, wild salmon. That was such a great one. You could just back your RV or tent right up to the river and just listen to the headwaters basically of the river go by. It was so beautiful. So, I guess you're going to have to do dispersed camping like you, and you know, be at the will of Bigfoot.
And hope that no rangers come and shoo me away, right?
No, they shouldn't. If you're doing, you know, legal dispersed camping, you're good.
What is the difference between legal and non-legal dispersed camping, do you know?
It depends. There are certain areas that, I even hate to use the terms, but what...
I'll tell you what. I'll look it up. Maybe I'll talk about that tomorrow because I'm just out of time, okay? But Todd, thank you for the update.
Good day.
All right.